I think I know why he's as good as you. He is you.
25 years ago, they made you from me. They chose me because there's never been anybody like me. We have to end this right now.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sub Beacon. I'm Sonny Bunch, along with Jonathan V. Last, and subbing in for Vic Mattis is Matt Continetti. Just a reminder, the Sub Beacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look under podcast and search for Sub Beacon. You will easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. JVL, what's going on?
So, boys, I need your help.
Oh.
I need your help.
That sounds serious.
Money talk.
Oh.
Can we have a money discussion?
How much is that watch you're wearing?
Do you need money?
So
I don't have any cash on.
Yeah, me. I don't carry cash anymore.
The Nationals are going to the World Series.
Oh
yes.
Flash is 11 years old,
mm.
obsessed with baseball, and it is entirely possible that this will be the only time in certainly his childhood,
right.
but maybe in his life up to, say, age 25, in which we could go to a World Series game in our hometown.
Mm-hmm.
He would remember this for forever.
Yes. He is of the age.
Right.
He's 11 years old.
This would be a foundational memory.
And there's the advantage of the fact that he doesn't especially like the Nationals. So if we went to the Nationals World Series game and they lost, mm-hmm. he would not be crushed by it. We like a couple of the Nationals players because we watch them in the minor leagues, and so we feel close to them.
Well, doesn't this run up against his front-running tendencies?
It does, which is why he's kind of like, you know, I could like the Nationals now that Harper's gone.
Oh, okay.
Bryce Harper leaving is another big...
what propelled us to the World Series.
So here is my question to you. What is the dividing line on ticket prices where you stop being Father of the Year and you cross over and just being silly and absolutely not worth it?
Do you have any
ridiculous.
Big vacations coming up?
No. So let us say, for the sake of argument, that the question isn't like, do I have the money for it?
Okay.
Let's assume
you have limitless funds.
JVL has a rainy day fund sitting around for things like timepieces or
right. But you're not going to Disney.
You know,
how many watches? How many watches is your son worth to you?
But this is a serious question. So, at what point do you say, "Yeah, you know what? Bite down on a stick. Just go do it." And at what point do you go, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Do you recall you and I went to a Sox game at Fenway?
I do remember
in 2004, and we got our tickets from a scalper.
Scalper right on the street.
And we paid a pretty penny. I'm pretty sure.
$60 a piece.
$80 a piece. Right. So,
Sox Yankees, the year they went to the World Series. It was great.
That's right. It was a July game, though.
Yep.
But
it was the night after the fight.
So, if you're not. Oh, was it that?
The night after Jason Varitek had punched out, what's his name? Alex Rodriguez at home plate.
Were you guys up there for a convention?
Yeah.
It was the DNC. Anyway, from that experience, I'm not against spending money to attend a baseball game. Whoa.
That is a whole different universe, though. You're talking like $60-$80 a ticket. I would assume. Can I guess what the prices are, JBL?
You can guess, and because I just looked up the second. So the primary market has not yet opened.
Uh-huh.
As we tape this, the Nationals have not released to the general public the non-purchased tickets not purchased yet by season ticket holders.
Uh-huh.
So only the secondary market is currently functioning.
So these are only season ticket holders who are looking to scalp what they already have.
Correct.
Go ahead and guess. I would guess the cheapest ticket is $500 for one ticket.
You would be wildly incorrect.
Way low?
Way low.
Oh, like 1,000? Yeah. What's
the cheapest standing room only ticket is currently $820.
Yeah. So I was going to tell you $1,200. I think if you're not going on vacation, if you're not going to Disney World, you have an 11-year-old child who loves baseball, baseball player, you're going to remember this, I'd be prepared for $1,200 a pop.
$1,200 a pop.
A ticket.
And you think $1,200 a ticket.
A ticket.
That is a perfectly fine thing because when you amortize that out over the next 80 years of his life.
Yeah.
over the next 80 years of his life, that comes down to something like, what, $15 a year or something?
Exactly.
That is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but, you know,
it's a lot of money.
Knowing the circumstances, knowing the price point, you don't want to stand for the whole game.
Well, the problem
you don't want to be squeezed together.
An 11-year-old kid can't stand because he won't be able to see.
Right.
So a standing room only ticket is not going to work for 11. Got to have a seat.
Well, you know, that actually is an argument for not going, because the people are going to be on their feet the entire time. So if you have a situation where you got a bunch of tall people in front of Flash, you might be disappointed. But yeah, you need a seat, especially kids that got to go to the bathroom every 90 minutes or whatever.
Doesn't happen when you get to age 11.
Oh, really?
This kid can.
That's something to look forward
to. Like
for
once
me.
A day, it's great.
What would you do, Sonny?
Where would you draw the line, Sonny?
I don't know. For a ticket to a game for a team he doesn't actually care about, this is the I would
well,
be willing,
but he cares
it's the a
World
little bit about
series
but
in
I,
Washington.
I would be willing to spend more money for like a if he was really into the Nationals. I think that would be a difference than this. I don't. $2,400 is a lot. I would. I mean, a grand maybe total for the whole thing.
A grand total.
In.
So I'm sorry, if you're spending $2,000, you wouldn't go the extra
$2,400.
$2,000 is
a grand
okay,
total.
20,
no, he's saying
a grand total.
$500 per ticket.
Yeah.
Which, okay. I mean...
At $500 a ticket, I'd buy four.
You go to the Green Turtle.
Right?
Watch, that's probably $500 to go to the bar across the street and watch the game.
All right. Well, so we'll see. It is. I'm not convinced that these ticket prices are going to stay where they are right now. I think that there is a rush of people
who might just fall.
Jumping in.
I mean, the crowd, though, on Tuesday night, it was...
They didn't sell out.
Don't forget.
No, there were still 2,000 tickets not sold.
Don't forget that DC fans are notorious front runners. So yeah, everyone, totally. everyone in every lobbying house and every, fundraiser in town is getting their hands on these tickets to distribute to their cronies.
I will say this, though. If the Yankees win the American League, then the prices will only go up because you have all the New York finance people just taking the train down to go there. So Houston, in order for this to be achievable for me, Houston has to win the
pennant.
You
need Houston to win.
Yeah, Yankees-Nats World Series will be, I think, a bigger event than a Houston-Nats series. In terms of media, in terms of coverage. You have the Acela Corridor Series. That will be if the Yankees...
Yeah, and just all the New York finance money would come down to, as they do... Everywhere else, like locusts.
Well, plus New York.
You know what?
Just
you know who's
going to
fix that? Elizabeth Warren.
Please.
Those people won't be able to afford a nickel.
No
once
politics.
Once she's president.
No politics. The problem with an Astros-Nats World Series is that it creates a tension for the Free Beacon office.
Why is that?
Because then it's the Nats versus Mrs. Upton.
That's true.
Well, Mr. Upton.
Mr. Upton.
Oh. Yeah.
Justin Verlander. But it also means that Ms. Upton will be coming to Washington. So
is she going to come by the offices? The matron saint?
We can try.
The matron saint of the Washington
Free Beacon? She's the matron saint of the Beacon.
Yeah. Anyway, how are you? Matt,
how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
I'm in a better mood than I was the last time we recorded the show. So
good.
Things are looking up.
Good.
Things are happy. I'm happy about the Nats. Had a nice trip to Chicago earlier in the week. Met a few Sub-Beacon fans.
They're everywhere.
So things are
good. Were they excited you were on the show? Was it like they got to meet a celebrity for the first time in their life?
They all wanted to know where Vic was. Do you have Vic with you?
Where is Vic? Where is Vic going? Yeah, why are you on the show again? You got the Marx brother
Vic?
Wrong.
You didn't. Do you know Vic Mattis? Yeah. What's he like? How big is his head?
It's really big. It's the biggest head I've ever seen. And that's what I tell people. I mean, that's not a lie.
It's the truth. Anyway, Sonny, how are you? What's going on, Santino?
I'm fine. I am perfect. Really
perfect.
Great. Everything
you got
is
sort of Jason
good.
Bateman hair going on today, and it's a great look.
Let me tell you how you do this. Get out of bed in the morning, and you're like, ah, crap, I got to get going to the stupid Sub-Beacon podcast. I got to tape with these idiots. So
that's
no shower.
That's
no shower this
hair?
Morning. More or less.
No product?
There's some residual product from the day before.
Residual product?
Yeah, but you know, it's important.
Wildcat.
I don't know. Things are great with me. How are you? I'm excited for the Nationals fans, even though I am not a Nationals fan, because I have a residual appreciation for baseball, even though I have not watched a single game in like 2 years.
The Orioles drove you from.
Well, no, it's it
the,
wasn't
the
it's
sport.
It's not just the Orioles. It's like having two kids. Like bedtime is during the games. I like it's not yeah. it's not a it's not a conducive to
it'll
to
come back.
Watching. But hopefully it will come back one of these days.
No, when your kids start watching baseball
son,
with you,
if your son likes it,
yeah. yeah. Hopefully my son will be into sports. We'll see. I don't know. I'm good. I'm good. I'm great.
Great. Gemini Man.
Whoa.
I don't know. Vic sent us a script, but there's just a hole here for the box office transition. So I don't know, you know.
Speaking of twins.
I used to think that this podcast was a tragedy, but now I realize it's a comedy. Speaking of comedies that were tragedies. Hold on. No, that's no good. All right. Joker remained at the top spot in the box office with $55.9 million this weekend, followed by The Addams Family with $30.3 million. And in third place was a movie we're talking about today, Gemini Man, grossed $20.5 million. JBL, do you have any box office thoughts?
Joker had a decline of 45%.
Less than that, like 42%.
Giving it the second largest hold in an October ever, I believe, and is now heading towards, what do we think, Sonny? 320? 320 domestic?
It is at, let's see, it's at 209 right now as of, I think, Wednesday's totals, or maybe even Tuesday's totals. I don't think 320 is out of the question. We'll see how it holds this weekend. This weekend, it's going to have some actual competition.
What was the budget?
$55 million. Yeah, I mean, this movie is already grossed 10 times its budget worldwide.
Yeah,
which is it's going to be hugely, hugely profitable.
It's very impressive.
Which is nice because maybe it means we'll start seeing, you know, some more experimental, darker, you know.
It is
adult.
Sonny always wants darker.
It is
adult
funny to me.
Takeaway.
Comic.
Well, it's a way of smuggling a character study into a comic book movie.
Right.
So this is what you would want. Is you would want, and absolutely, to some degree, Marvel already does this. They use the comic book characters as a means of making types of movies that Hollywood has abandoned. Right.
Absolutely.
So caper films or comedies, or in this case, in the DC universe and Todd Phillips, it's basically a throwback to the types of character studies that, in many ways, it's an homage to them that filmmakers made in the late 70s, early 80s. So if that's a model, I think that might be an upshot of the comic book revolution.
It's funny that the DC cinematic universe is alive.
Yes.
But it's alive with movies like Joker and Aquaman.
Well, this is not part of the DC cinematic universe. This is this is like an Elseworlds story.
But
right?
it's a funny, but it's part, you know,
it's
if you're DC
property,
trying to figure out
right,
what you're going
property,
to do,
right.
This is another way to keep going, right?
Well, I mean, this is
you know, you don't know what you want to do with Justice League 2, but we could make another Joker type movie, another standalone.
I'm extremely curious to see what happens with Wonder Woman 2, because I get the sense that that movie is either in trouble or a disaster, because I've seen two images from the film.
They've delayed it.
They've pushed it back
multiple times.
They've pushed back the release. I think two still photos from the set have been released, one of Chris Pine and then one of Wonder Woman herself, I think, and a couple posters. But like, I have no idea what is going on with this movie. I have no idea where it is. You know, there was some talk that they didn't want to step on the releases of the other films, but like, I would say for a movie that is supposed to be kind of the resurgence of the whole DC expanded universe, it's weird radio silence.
How is Cyborg doing? Is that
The Flash
they
movie
have a director
is
they were choosing between they, two directors like Steven
well,
Spielberg and somebody else.
Have they greenlit Aquaman 2? Or are they going to do a sequel?
Pretty sure it's greenlit, but I don't think that it's in production or even pre-production yet. I mean, the movie made $1.2 billion or whatever. Like, they're gonna keep making these movies. Wonder Woman did very well at the box office. They have to make another one of the, I mean, they've got one essentially
so
in the can.
I think what DC needs to do, and I don't know what studio did they partner with on Joker?
Warner's.
And right. Okay. So yeah. So what Warner is do Penguin. But don't do the...
Well, they've got a Batman movie in the works right now.
Don't do the Oswald Cobblepot, Danny DeVito, Monster Penguin from Batman Returns, but do something similar to the Joker plot, you know, the origin of the bad guy, but do it with Penguin, who's a mobster, you know, his rise through the mob, right? I think that you can add some realism. It can still be gritty, but it's also kind of keyed into that world. Otherwise, because the problem with a lot of Batman villains is they're so ridiculous. You know, you're not going to follow this up with, you know,
Killer Croc.
Right, that's what I'm going to say. Even Catwoman, there's something, you can never really escape the Eartha Kitt legacy. You know, it's hard to do something serious with Catwoman. But Penguin, I think, gives you a nice...
Catwoman's just a high-rise robber. I think you could do that pretty easily. They did it pretty well in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, but even that, I think it was pretty... You know, the only time... She's never referred to as Catwoman, right? In the entire movie in Dark Knight Rises. And the only time you ever get that little flash of the old show is when she puts up those goggles at the end, you know, and that, or when she's breaking in, I think she lifts her goggles and they're the little cat ears. There's something kind of kitschy about that character. That's all I work.
The Riddler.
You know,
the Riddler is very serious.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. It's like, okay.
You could do the Riddler, but it would have to be a Saw movie. Basically.
Yeah. No, the Riddler has to, yeah. No, I actually know what they need to do. I have the answer to this.
Oh, go ahead.
You always
have
the answer.
So what we need is a movie in which we learn where Superman came from.
Like the planet?
An origin story.
An origin story for Superman.
Don't you think? Isn't that what we finally need? Because people have forgotten where Superman comes from.
What if we did... What if we did an origin story for where Superman's dad came from? We could call the show Krypton. Put it on the CW.
That's a great idea.
It'd be canceled after a year.
Yeah,
that already happened.
All right, that's all I've got.
I don't know. I am fascinated that this movie dropped only 42%. I thought it was going to be
very good.
I thought it was going to be a bigger drop. Our friend of the show, Gabriel Rossman, suggested that this is a function of people staying away that first weekend. That the media actually scared people into.
Right. Oh.
Scared people into staying away. So the drop is not necessarily good word of mouth / high quality of the film. It was just people who were a little bit freaked out.
But doesn't that work both ways? I think there's something to, like in my case, I bought into the media narrative, but then...
That there would be a shooting?
No, just that this was a... You know, the more sophisticated critics like Anthony Lane weren't indulging in the mass hysteria about this is going to, you know, lead to the incel revolution. They're more like the film is just, a grind to watch and everything is disgusting and it's just pitiful and it's just hitting you over the head all the time. I was like, okay, well, I don't really want to sit through 2 hours of misery. That's my general rule when I go watch movies. But then on second look, and then you start hearing other critics, they say, well, that actually is... It's a dark movie, but there's more to that, and the ending is quite spectacular. And it's like, oh, okay, now maybe I do want to watch this film.
And I think it may reward repeated viewings. We got a long, long email that you forwarded to me from a guy who'd seen it 3 times and had all sorts of very deep insights. He, in fact, thinks that Thomas Wayne is the Joker's father. But the most interesting thing he noted is that when the very first time Joker fires the gun... In the apartment, it hits a spot of wall, and that the pattern of the wallpaper is the same pattern on the jacket that Robert De Niro was wearing at the very end. Anyway, just fascinating. That's little things like that that are going on. And so it could be that the movie just really does reward repeated viewings.
I think it does. I will definitely see it again, though maybe not until it comes out on Blu-ray, just because too many other things going on. I've got to go see things like Gemini Man. Gemini Man, very exciting. Will Smith first. Here's, I guess I'll be doing a big boy review. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
Sonny, how about a big boy review?
Gemini Man is like a refugee from the 1990s that has come to us. It is produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. It is Jerry Bruckheimer shanghaiing a high quality director who is not necessarily known for action to make a great action movie, Ang Lee. Who has made them in the past, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, of course, but is kind of more in the vein of the introspective emotional films.
You know, I think you just made a microaggression. You said Ang Lee was shanghaied.
Oh, no.
Just want to
point out, Sonny. I'm in a lot of trouble. But it has the easiest elevator pitch of all time. Will Smith fights himself. It really feels like a 1990s movie, which is interesting because it uses 2000s technology. Not even really 2010s technology, more 2000s technology. Ang Lee has shot this movie in high frame rate 3D, which people kind of dismissively refer to as the soap opera effect or the motion smoothing effect. And we will get to that in a minute. But it really is the only interesting thing about this movie, which is, frankly, again, just a very straightforward 1990s style high concept action movie. Will Smith is the world's greatest assassin. He's cloned by his boss, and the clone then must kill the world's greatest assassin to assume his place in the hierarchy of great assassins. More or less.
There is one other technological aspect that bears mentioning, which is that unlike the forthcoming Irishman, in which Pacino and De Niro are de-aged.
Pesci
is de-aged, though what I learned recently is only for two scenes. Mm. The younger Will Smith character here, Junior, is actually entirely a creation of the digital artists. There is no de-aging here.
He's Gollum. Up.
He is Gollum. Yeah. Yeah. And you can tell that in some of the action scenes,
the way he moves,
which are just
awful.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Right. So that is another, I think, aspect of it that deserves, kind of a technical discussion.
Would have been funny if it was Andy Serkis playing Will Smith.
That would have been funny.
I don't know. One of my questions in my notes after the movie was, who played
Will Smith
Jr.? Yeah. Because whoever it was, the performance was terrible.
Are you sure about that? Because I've definitely seen images stills from the set where Will Smith has like the dot.
Some of that, but it's not like he Will Smith, but it wasn't as though they recorded a performance and then they said, oh, we're going to use de-aging.
Right. Well, I mean, it's him fighting himself. So there has to be another actor there for him to.
Sometimes the eye lines are totally wrong. One of the things, I'm not sure any of the people in this movie were ever in the same place at the same time. They're looking off in different directions. My other note was Benedict Wong even there? It's his lines, every single one. Benedict Wong is there as kind of a sidekick, kind of for comic relief. Every single line he utters in this film falls flat. The timing is off. He adds nothing. And I like this actor a lot. And I was happy to see him appear. But sometimes I was like, is he even there? And sometimes I noticed they were shooting them in one shot. So sometimes the filmmaker does that, and if they have to do reshoots and they have to insert someone into a scene post hoc, no one seemed to actually be interacting with another person.
Well, there was a weird underplayed subplot about them stealing the plane. There were two lines where there's you gotta have a really good friend to get a plane like that, and then they're just in the plane. And I'm like, wait, what was that setting up?
But then they
Then they land the plane, and he's like, goodbye, old friend. And I'm like, what is going on with this plane? I don't understand what the deal with this. So it was clear there was something that was excised from this movie, I think, that had a lot to do with Benedict Wong. But anyway, so here's the thing. The movie is not good.
It's not a good movie.
As a piece of storytelling, it is not particularly interesting or good. It is like a 90s movie with the quippy one-liners and the very bare-bones plot, and you're just kind of moving from point A to point B to get to the action scenes. Mm-hmm. Fine. That's fine. What is interesting about this film, and I saw it in the IMAX high frame rate 3D screening, and I found it to be visually entrancing. It is immersive in a way that I have never actually experienced with a 3D film or an IMAX film or anything. It was like being right there. And it felt like being inside a video game. This is the best video game since Tomorrow Never Dies, in my opinion. It's not actually based on a video game. It's not, but it is shot with the kind of first person perspective, like on some of those motorcycle chase scenes. You have like missions and bosses and cutscenes, and the actual action sequences again are incredibly immersive. It was like watching a grenade go off in front of me. I mean, in some of those explosions and the fire, and I found it all very fascinating and totally entrancing. Will Smith is, again, it's like he's right there. It's like you're looking at him on 10 feet away from you. And as an experience, the only time I have felt this way about a film is Gravity. Gravity was a movie that felt immersive, and like I actually was like kind of short of breath after coming out of it. It was an experience. It was like a cinematic event experience. I've never watched Gravity again because the story I didn't really care about. It wasn't that interesting. And I feel the same way about this. I can't imagine like sitting down to my TV and watching 30 minutes of Gemini Man when I see it on HBO 2 in 6 months. But it was a fascinating experience, and I'm curious if you guys had a similar reaction to it.
I thought the visuals were stunning. I mean, that's what Ang Lee does. I mean, he's a brilliant kind of filmmaker. The composition of the shots, the cinematography was great. I also thought it was immersive.
Did you see it in high frame rate?
I saw it in 3D 120 FPS, but not on an IMAX screen. So,
okay, same.
And at first it was quite jarring, and I think purposely so. He was doing a lot of depth of field stuff in the first couple of scenes and mm-hmm. sequences to kind of get you in there, and so you kind of see, oh wow, that there is kind of a solidity to everything that is missing from a normal film. I actually stopped noticing it though by the end of the movie. I think I was so annoyed at the movie for various other reasons that I felt there, and there was kind of a, especially in the last fight scene, some of those explosions or that ridiculous machine gun that the holdover from
the
Mad Max.
The minigun.
Yeah. And that was kind of shook the theater. But what I found actually is that I noticed the effect less as the film went on.
I definitely noticed the kind of motion smoothing soap opera aspect of it less as the movie went along. It's so different. It is so different than anything else in theaters that it is jarring at first. But it definitely grew on me. And that the action scene that's set in the kind of courtyard of the apartment complex or the hacienda style house or whatever that is.
When they're in Cartagena.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
He's actually using depth of field and using different elevations of the characters to make different images work.
I read an interview with him where he, and during the making of the film, and he said just kind of his previous film, the Long Walk movie,
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, or whatever.
I didn't see. Yeah. I don't think anybody saw. Really,
nobody saw. Yeah.
But he was saying, Lee said, I'm now so fixated on the technology and trying to create a new cinema, a new media, that the story is less important. And you know what?
It shows.
You can tell. Yeah. You can tell he didn't care about the story or even the performances.
JBL, what were your thoughts?
It's funny he says that. So this movie has been in development since at least 1997. It has had over the years Tony Scott, Curtis Hanson, and Joe Carnahan all actually attached to direct it. It has had attached to be the star Harrison Ford, Chris O'Donnell, Mel Gibson, John Voight, Nicolas Cage, Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Clint Eastwood, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, and Sean Connery, all at various points in time.
As I said, this is like a refugee from the 1990s.
Well, the Harrison Ford version would be awesome.
And so Ang Lee comes in and just picks up this thing, which has God even knows how many credited writers. Billy Ray, Andrew Niccol, David Benioff, Brian Helgeland, Jonathan Hansley, Stephen Rivetti, and Christopher Wilkinson.
There was a very funny...
All the writers.
The credit. Did you notice that?
There was a very funny story in The Hollywood Reporter about how the guy who wrote the script originally sold it in like the mid-90s, you know, spec script boom. And then it wound up in development hell because nobody could get the technology right. And so what's on the screen is nothing like what he actually wrote because it went through like 17 different iterations from guys like Oscar nominee Billy Ray. You
know? So, yeah, he doesn't care about it. For me, the motion smoothing high frame rate effect never diminished. And there were only two points in the movie where I understood why it was being used. The first is the explosion, the grenade explosion in the courtyard.
Yeah.
So there is a scene where real Will Smith, is on the top balcony of an enclosed courtyard. Somebody from down below throws a grenade up he bats it back down, and there is an explosion. And the high frame rate explosion is astonishing. Yes. It looks and feels like if you've ever been to Universal Studios to one of the stunt shows where, you know, they show how special effects are done and something blows up. That's what it felt like. The immediacy of that was wild. And the only other scene in the movie that takes full advantage of that is towards the end when a missile is shot at the Jeep and the Jeep mm-hmm. explodes. Mm-hmm. Everything else, it detracts. The high frame rate action sequences where people are fighting or driving, the high frame rate exposes the staging of it.
Well, with
those
the,
things look
with
highly
Junior.
Staged. There is no verisimilitude to it. There is no, you actually feel the slowness because,
I disagree. In
movies, they are always filming slower than it actually looks on screen. Once you put, you know, like they're driving 45 miles an hour, but they use the camera to make it look like they're driving 90 miles an hour. All of those seams are exposed this way. Mm. And you have to, if you're going to shoot in high frame rate, I think you have to direct the movie differently. You have to use a lot more medium distance coverage shots. You got to stay away from super close-ups because the super close-ups look weird. And the actors have to act differently. And this is what I kept coming back to. You know, there's has long been the difference between TV actors and movie actors. And the difference is that when you're a movie actor, you're getting a close-up of your face 25 feet tall on a screen. And so you got to do less. Right, so you have to be able to do more expression with less movement, where television actors can be broader, right? You use your hands all over. You think about Friends and Ross and Jennifer Aniston. The motions are all very big. With high frame rate, you have to do even less because it exposes everything you're doing. And so you've got to be able to hold yourself very, very still. And anytime anybody on screen is not holding themselves very still, it looks cheap and staged. In ways that I thought undercut the verisimilitude rather and undercut the immersion, like or maybe it's you're being immersed in something that's obviously fake.
This is why I think it's important to draw this distinction between the high frame rate 3D on the one hand and the character of Junior, mm-hmm. the CGI young Will Smith on the other, because I felt to take that scene in Cartagena, for example. The only time when I lost the suspension of disbelief was when Junior starts moving around physically. And it's so clear that he was painted on that. And this actually goes to your point about, I think, related to the high frame rate, whereas the special effects have to be even better if they're CGI because you just the eyes picks it up. And he was moving... You know, on the one hand, he's supposed to be youthful and an expert assassin, so he's, you know, balletic and acrobatic, but the movements were so bizarre.
They were like the first 2001 Spider-Man.
Yeah. So that was jarring to me. And that's why I think that the CGI Smith was actually a bigger problem for the movie than the type of technical issues you described, because the performance was also weird. I mean, talk about not moving. That visage of Junior has no expression.
Yeah. No, it's blank.
He has no expression. Yeah. And the voice is, it's kind of, it's the younger Will Smith voice. So some scenes I thought I was watching one of Will Smith's first movies, The 6 Degrees of Separation, where he plays the male hustler. And I'm saying, hold on, what's going on here? You know, what type of movie am I watching? He was a real distraction for me. And this is it gets to the point about the delay in the production of the movie, which is, you know, you could do a version of this movie that works. In fact, Rian Johnson did it with Looper. You can just cast a younger actor who's not the same person. I mean, think about if they made it in the 1990s and Harrison Ford was the middle-aged assassin. And yet he's being tracked by a younger...
Chris Pine.
Yeah, or right. I don't know who the equivalent of the 90s would have been at that point. But yeah, somebody, say early 90s, River Phoenix, or when he's still alive, he's there. That would make a good... That's a high concept film.
I also thought Looper looked ridiculous, though. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt looked ridiculous, like made to look up like young Bruce Willis, because I was like, well, I know what young Bruce Willis looks like. It's not this. So why are you trying to make him? Why are you putting like chin putty?
It didn't bother me. I like.
Well, I would rather just. I would rather just have them, like, just have it be Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You know.
So the whole time though, while I'm watching Gemini Man, I just couldn't stop asking myself in every single frame, why are you doing this? Like, what is the artistic purpose of using high frame right here? And again, with the exception of those two scenes, I couldn't come up with one. It literally just felt like somebody playing with the technology because they had the technology to play with. And that's always bad.
I totally disagree. I found it really arresting and totally immersive. Like from that first scene on the hilltop where he's tracking the train, I felt like I was there. Or the scene on the boat, right? Will Smith goes to visit a friend who is a former assassin. He's living out on a boat. The water effects
just
look. I mean, it looked like you were in the middle of the ocean.
Difference between IMAX and non-IMAX, though.
Maybe.
Right? I mean, we didn't see it on IMAX.
I'm with Sonny on some of this. I mean, I agree that scene on the yacht and the when people are killed and fall off the boat and they splash there again, there is kind of this solidity to the water that I thought was quite striking. But you know, at the end of the day, if the movie doesn't work, then it, all these effects don't matter.
Right. The movie's not a good movie. I mean,
like I was at a funeral. I honestly felt everyone just seemed so depressed. Will Smith seemed depressed throughout the entire movie until one point I'll get to in a second. Young Will Smith is a robot, so he had no emotions.
What about Mary Elizabeth Winstead? What'd you
I
think
thought
of her?
She was nothing. I didn't think she added nothing. I didn't know. I had to look her up because I don't watch the show that she's on. She's on Fargo, right?
She was on a season of Fargo.
I had no idea who she was. I liked her in the first few scenes where she's the boat attendant. She's the dock attendant. That's cute. They'll have a romance. And then it turns out she's a spy too.
Wow.
And he's like,
"This is
you just got burned.
Strong women.
You just got burned." And she has no reaction. She's like, "Oh yeah, you got me. She had no, thanks for waking me up before the person killed me." She had no emotion.
I thought she was delightful in the movie.
Oh my
frankly.
God.
I liked her a lot.
What did you like about her?
I like. I just think she's
perky.
She's a
perky presence.
She's a great presence on screen. She lightens everything up a little bit. My big problem with the movie, from a storytelling perspective, is the whole last like 15 minutes or 10 minutes where they're like at the college campus and that scene just won't end.
Hold it. But that's the only time that Will Smith shows any flash of charisma. The one line.
No.
15
nonsense.
Seconds before the credits roll.
Nonsense.
He is
nonsense.
Joking around about aging. Is like, you got, you know, 200 pounds a year of prime aged man. Only time he cracks a joke that made me laugh. And that is the only moment.
I don't go to movies for jokes and laughing.
I know you don't.
I'm not there
you
for
go
happiness.
To nihilist cinema. That's
I'm
what
not there
you
for
want.
Happiness. I want, you know, if you're going to make a joke, I want it to be about this, the awfulness of life.
Death and decay.
The only thing that bothered me, the only true insult to the audience's intelligence that I couldn't stomach, and you, when we sat down, you were like, JVL, you're not going to pick this movie to death, are you? And I'm not. There's only one thing. There's this moment where the big reveal is that the evil company is cloning super soldiers. And everyone was like, mind blown. Yeah. I cannot believe that they're cloning super soldiers. The name of the effing company is Gemini. What do you think it means? This is like, you know that, you know, Darth Vader means father in German.
Dark father.
I mean, like, everything about it, I was like, of course that's what they do. They call the company the Gemini Corporation. Like, what?
But even that was a letdown because then, they're building this army of super soldiers. And then, you know, and there, it turns out there's more than one junior. Well, and then, but then at the end, they're like, well, luckily that was the only one. Don't have to worry about that. All the conflicts are resolved.
Well, then, I mean, this structurally, the story is built like it's going to reveal a big secret halfway through. Except for the fact that literally every advertisement and trailer for this movie has been about that big reveal.
No, but also the reveal comes from Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character. Thank you for pointing that out. That was another thing that annoyed me. you want to have a moment of recognition where he discovers himself that he's being tracked and hunted by himself, his younger self. Instead, she goes to
like
this
an
place.
Off-screen,
she goes to this place in Budapest.
She goes to Theranos.
Yeah, she goes to Theranos outlet branch in Budapest and says, "Here, can you take these samples?" And then the next scene, she's on a bench. She goes, "Yeah, you know, it's
Guess
you.
What?
Guess
it's
what?
Clone.
It's you." And again, to that funereal sense, he's like, "Oh man." Oh, and then they have another scene later. It's, how are you doing? I'm fine. Don't talk about it.
I don't want to talk about how I've been cloned.
Let's get back on the plane that we stole from somebody we don't know. I love the two scenes. That you see them on the plane going to Europe, and then 20 minutes later, they're back on the plane going back. And now we have to go to Georgia, to the huge complex. The city, town, and Clive Owen
It's not clear if that town is like part of the complex it's like a training
area. At first,
because
the other, they have like an Iraqi town.
There's nobody there
for training.
Because there's literally no one
empty. Yeah, U.S. urban environment. But then the cops show up and Clive Owen's on the walking
track. Get out of here.
Turn your police men away.
We've got terrorists here.
Okay, Clive Owen.
Thanks for the heads up.
Somebody made a joke on Twitter that this movie is like a forced march through all of the places where you can get tax credits for shooting. it's like they go to countries where you can get money to shoot. They go to states where you can get money to shoot. Anyway.
Well, I saw another. So I finally, just a point of comparison, I finally watched Spider-Man Homecoming yesterday evening. Again, which is another one of these movies where it's a forced march through tax credit cities, and you go through the credits, which of course in a Marvel movie you have to read because you want the post-credit scenes, and they thank the governments, you know, of Prague. And
you watched Homecoming or Far From Home?
I'm sorry, Far From Home. Okay. Far From Home. Right. So Prague and Venice and London and all that. And I was just stunned. After I watched the movie, I said to my wife, I just sat through a movie. I've seen two movies this week, one on Monday in the theater and the other at home. And I enjoyed the one at home so much more. Everything, it was funny. The action was better. The effects were better. The story was better. The characters were better. It's remarkable to me, the level, the difference in quality. Yeah. And of course, you have good talent associated with Gemini Man. You have Will Smith. You have Clive Owen. You have Ang Lee.
Who was filming it in, or phoning it in as hard as I've ever seen anyone phone it in.
As they all
in.
Were. But yeah.
But I feel like Will Smith is, Will Smith is always a pro. I feel like he's definitely trying his hardest in this movie.
Yeah, the old Will Smith is good.
But Clive Owen is just like, hey, Junior.
Junior.
You gotta get it together. You gotta kill yourself to take. I was just like, oh my god! It really. Every scene with Clive Owen felt like a cutscene from a video game.
Lean
like
into the pain.
And it really, I do think that the best way to understand this is as an immersive, like unplayable video game. Like that's what it feels like.
Is Ang Lee in movie jail? Because why else would you pick up this project?
I think he did it because he likes playing around with the high frame rate 3D. I mean, I think that is literally the only reason he did it. This is why
he's
made
a tinkerer.
Billy Lynn's Halftime Walk or whatever that dumb movie was.
Was kind of similar at least the CGI aspects of it.
How sad.
Yeah. I'd put him in movie jail.
You would put him in movie jail after this?
Please.
So speaking of 3D, I mean, I do think that there is something to discuss here about the state of the industry. With regard to 3D and 2D, because the one way to think of this film is as a last ditch effort to make 3D something worth watching in theaters, an experience that people will pay for, and they need that because the share of 3D tickets sold hit like an 8-year low last year. It's now down to
kill it.
It's down to 16% of tickets sold were sold in 3D. 84% were sold in 2D.
What was the high? What was the high water mark percentage
the
on 3D?
The high water mark in terms of tickets sold was, I believe, 22% to 78%. Okay. So almost 1 in 4.
Right.
At one point, almost 1 in 4 tickets sold, or almost 1 in 4. Revenue dollars
revenue dollars. Right.
So it's not tickets sold; it's revenue. But you know, it's now down to the in terms of absolute dollars, 3D tickets were sold $6.7 billion worth of tickets, which is lower than any point since 2014. non-3D was 34.4. So I like it's interesting that this is we are clearly running toward the end of this 3D cycle that we go through every 20 years with Hollywood, where they try to make us watch 3D movies. Now, the big question is James Cameron able to revive this with his four Avatar movies?
And don't we think, aren't there rumors that he's trying to develop some technology that would make the 3D experience different?
I don't know. I mean,
4D
or glassless 3D.
I mean, this is the only the, right? they keep pushing this movie back because they keep trying to. Yeah. But I just don't see any way that they could roll out glassless 3D in enough theaters that it would be worthwhile.
Right.
Because you would have to upgrade the projectors again, and the theaters are not going to do.
Right.
The theaters are not going to do that again.
So you might have that in a few places for these Avatar films,
yeah.
But mostly it will be people just putting on the glasses. I found, you know, growing up in the last, you know, the tail end, maybe the last 3D thing, it was such a burden to experience 3D. The glasses were heavy. They were, you didn't know how to put them on. They were annoying. I found this movie, I sat there with the glasses. I, like I said, by the end of the movie, I wasn't even really noticing all the technological aspects all that much. I was just more annoyed at the story and the performances than anything. Also, the score was so depressing. It was just like,
you don't like this movie because it made you feel sad.
No movie should make me feel sad.
Not go see Joker then.
Yeah, Sonny, we should celebrate the death of 3D.
I agree. Hate it. Well, it's interesting as a critic.
But you liked it here.
I did like it here. Well, look, I liked it here because they were actually doing something with it that felt like more than a cheap cash grab.
3D is fine. Avatar is the perfect.
I'm interested to see
if you're
using
it for a purpose.
Well,
then it's fine.
And sometimes they use it for a purpose and it goes really poorly. Like the Peter Jackson Hobbit HFR movies all looked terrible.
Not
like
good.
They all looked
and
really,
you know,
really
why
bad.
Why do you ascribe that to? Because I was expecting something similar in Gemini Man, and that wasn't the case at all.
I think part of it is, I think Ang Lee is a better filmmaker than Peter Jackson.
Mm.
But two, I think part of the reason that the Hobbit movies looked so fake is because there is so much costume design and set design.
Mm-hmm.
It's like JBL says, right? You really see the seams.
Mm-hmm.
And when it looked like being at a middle school Ren fair. That's like all right. That's all I thought when I was watching the Hobbit movie in HFR. It just looked really bad and really fake. And here, because it's real people in real locations with real, you know, they look like just regular normal folks, I thought it was fine. I don't think you have that same problem. But yeah, I mean, I am excited for the death of 3D. As a critic, you know, it's funny when the 3D boom kicked off in 2008 or 2009 with Avatar, right? Every time there was a movie that came out in 3D, the studios would make the critics see it in 3D.
Hmm.
They would make us go see it in 3D, and that is like what we would have to review. And they stopped doing that 2 or 3 years ago because all of those movies were getting hammered by critics. Because critics hate 3D because 3D is terrible. Audiences hate 3D. Adults hate 3D. The only people who like 3D are the 12-year-old kids going to see Cars movies.
Do they like it even?
Kids are more into 3D than adults. Kids are more into 3D than adults. Like I said, you know, I could probably go through my inbox, my email inbox, and make a chart tracking the decline of 3D just by the number of invitations to 3D screenings. Because it is like a 30 degree down line on the chart.
Kill it. Do you remember when we were being forced into home theater 3D?
I do remember that.
That was a little thing.
Boy, howdy. And it was going to happen. And there were 3D channels on your cable box. Yeah. And you could,
and they,
you know,
they
got to buy the 3D flat screen.
You have to buy the 3D flat screen and the 3D glasses that ran on batteries?
Batteries, because they have shutters going in them. Because there were people who either believed that audience viewing habits were to sit in one place for 2.5 hours
directly
without moving,
in front of the screen, 6 feet from the screen.
Or they decided that they knew that people didn't actually use a television that way, that most people use it as something that's happening in the background and they move around while it's on. Or they thought they could just force people to change their behavior in relationship to the television screen. Boy, I love it when corporations die like that.
Yeah, but you
we're not going to talk politics.
But that's the beauty of capitalism, my friends, is because the dogs wouldn't eat the dog food, these things went away.
Taking the capitalists. President, the capitalists are taking away Blu-ray
discs.
They,
you know, you'll start regretting your ideological turn, Jonathan, when they mandate the 3D home units.
Sonny, if Elizabeth Warren promises to issue an executive order commanding that Blu-ray discs still be produced, are you on board?
No, I'm not going to get on board your command economy communism over here.
All right. He's wearing red. He's wearing a red vest, ladies and gentlemen.
I always knew he was a comic. All right. So anyway, do we have any more 3D thoughts?
No,
make it we've stretched this out as long as we can.
We're done. All right.
Corrections, additions?
Corrections, additions, shout outs. JVL, do you have any corrections or shout outs?
I have a shout out from somebody. I forget who it was who sent this to me. And so I'm sorry that I'm not giving you credit. I don't do Instagram. Neither of you do Instagram.
I am on Instagram, but I don't really do Instagram.
Somebody sent me an Instagram from something called The Naughty Fork. And it is a picture of a man sticking chopsticks with something in between it into the open and willing mouth of a young blonde woman. And this man is an uncanny doppelganger for Vic.
He looks
so much
like Vic.
So that I initially thought it was Vic. And
he
I
doesn't
thought,
look that much like Vic.
Okay, so he's wearing
looks,
the exact same
similar,
glasses.
He looks similar to Vic.
This dressing the same, the same hair.
Same big grin.
The same grin. And he's making the same, you know, the Vic, the patented Vic surprised angry face?
Yes.
Anybody who hears that sound will know the image of Vic. If you go to Google and type in Victorino Mattis and then do the image search, that's what you get. He's making that face.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I don't know. I've been staring at it literally the entire time we've been taping this episode. I've had Vic, fake Vic, doppelganger
fake
Vic.
You know what?
Staring
why?
Back at
number
it.
Two. This man's face is not as wide as Vic's. Vic's head.
He's a little more vertical.
Vic has the
Vic's or the
Mark
Olmec.
Shields John McLaughlin head.
The Olmec head.
It's the Olmec head. It's wide, and so that's the giveaway here. The resemblance is funny.
Should I go post this on Twitter?
Yeah, you should put it on Twitter. At JV Last.
I'm not going to be on Twitter.
All right. That's all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Continetti. And if you want to see that picture, at JV Last. He might crack. He might put it on there. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts, and we are there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. Anything? Got any outtakes here?
You know, I was going to do the fake Vic as my outtake, but it's... But you've, I couldn't
you've wasted
stop.
It.
Good part of the show.
I couldn't... I just couldn't take my eyes off of it.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. Literally all show long.
You texted it to us and I was like, oh, that does look kind of like Vic.
Right. And then
but
Vic
I'm not
said, is that the Marimoto? Like,
is
get
that Marimoto? I don't
Morimoto.
Know.
Morimoto. And so maybe this is a foodie guy
he
that
must
everybody
be
knows,
a foodie.
But I did not want to go into Instagram and find out what the Naughty Fork was.
Morimoto Mattis.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's all right. Anyway, do you guys have anything else? No.
I just wish we had more to say about Gemini Man.
We talked about it for a while.
I just wish we could just keep going forever and ever.
What's next week?
I have no idea. I don't know.
But
we might not,
good movies.
We might not. We might not have
out,
a show next week.
Yeah, but good.
Zombieland 2 and Maleficent 2, I think, is what's coming
out. So nothing good is coming out. Fine.
November is when the good stuff starts coming out.
I'm sure it's fine.
Irishman.
You're stepping over our exit line. We say, I'm sure it's fine, and then the show's over.
Say it, Matt.
Say it. Now you say it.
I'm sure it's fine.